It's your favorite Monday morning event, Johnny. It's a new release of a new Talk About That.
Oh, we're doing it again.
Crowds of people cheer in
throngs.
Exultation, lifting their collective voices in a cry for more Talk About That.
You love to hear it.
You do.
I don't hear it.
I don't hear it either. I'm not sure it's happening. Verbosity, though, is
they like hit a button somewhere on a digital device, and we're like, see, we feel the endorphin rush from it.
You know, we do have more listeners right now. We are at our record month of downloads, so that's good.
Yeah, we talked about that at lunch today about like, well, do we want to keep moving forward with what we've been talking about? Do we want to try to keep it lighter? And then, like, I don't want to lose people because I know some people get fatigued if it gets whatever, quote unquote, political. I was on another podcast yesterday talking about, like, political usually means you didn't agree with my position. Like, nobody ever gets accused of being political.
Right.
If they're pro your position, they're always like, it's the minute like you tread on their, whatever their sacred cow is.
Right.
They're like, oh boy, here we go.
You're getting political.
He's getting political. And I think that's interesting because, I mean, like we talked about last week, like almost every issue is political. But anyway, all that said, we're back, and John still has a box of pork rinds at the end of his desk.
It's
still there.
I need to dispose of those.
Those were given to the church? Is that what happened? What
I
is that?
I think those were expired ones that couldn't be given out. And so they
got them at the food bank or whatever?
They made it to my
office. Are pork rinds doing at a food bank anyway?
I don't know. Someone does cared that, enough
that's
about
not,
me.
That's not nourishment.
Because a keto, they know that would be something I would enjoy, but I'm not... Johnny, I don't know.
Least of all, a stale pork rind. Hey, John.
Here, dip
you eat this garbage.
Cheese sauce. Yeah.
Is that what you do? Pork rinds and cheese?
Well, like if you go to a Mexican restaurant and you can't eat the chips, you take pork rinds for the salsa and for the
you
cheese.
You take them with you?
Well,
you take outside rinds?
I do. Sometimes I hide them out of shame. Like I used to hide them. Now I put them on the table. Like, what are they going to do? Like, you can't bring that in here. Like in the beginning of keto, yes, I'd hide them in Laura's purse and I'd reach down into the purse and get some, you know.
I know
it's such a strange.
You're reaching into your wife's purse for contraband chips.
Yeah, because you know you didn't want to feel like you're not, even though the chips are free.
What is your stance on movie theater outside candy?
Oh man,
because is this a sin issue? But if they have a rule against it and you violate it, is that sin? I don't know. So it's a movie theater policy? Is it a law, though? To me, it's like the prices are so high, John, and it's 10 for 10 at Walgreens to get like some Milk Duds. 10 for 10.
You buy 10 packs of Milk Duds?
What I do is I eat 5 in the movie and I take 5 home. No. But I'm saying it's a dollar versus $5 for the same Milk Duds.
Yeah, but you
That's a savings of almost $4.
I was told to be. I get your abacus out. You know, I know that I'm not going to say who, but in our family, there may be one of the adults in the marriage,
right,
who has been known to have
the adults that you're married to.
Within the
one of the adults you're married
within
to,
within the marriage that exists in my home.
Yeah.
That there may be one of the partners in the marriage who has before brought outside contraband into movie theaters because this person has more compartments in said clothing /
flasks. No, she doesn't bring flasks in. Well, they don't sell this. Have a little sip of this.
I can see her filling her flask with cherry cola or whatever she get at the. No, but like. I'm just saying, I'm not here to condemn or criticize.
Right.
I'm not even naming who it is, Johnny.
No. Her initials are Laura Driver.
I was going to say her identity is completely hidden from view, so totally safe here.
Yes.
I don't know, man. Like, it's one of those, it's kind of like speeding, Johnny.
Where do you draw the line, though? Like, I would buy a popcorn because I prefer the movie theater popcorn. I've seen people sneak in their own microwave popcorn.
No, no, she has to have theater popcorn.
Yeah, because it's fresh.
Laura goes nuts about theater popcorn.
Yeah.
You know, they have the little, you dispense your own butter station now.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So when we go over there.
I don't understand what we thought. I think that's about fatigue on the part of the consumer, of the base, the franchise, because clearly Americans should not be given the responsibility of dispensing their own butter.
I think it's kind of like, because you're standing there watching more, can I have more? They're like, finally, you do it yourself.
Do it yourself,
big guy.
Fatty. Yeah.
So
here's the pump.
We go over there, and for Laura, it's all about equal distribution of butter in equal parts.
Sure, you do the layer.
And so she pours out. She'll bring plastic baggies sometimes.
She'll pour out half the popcorn just so she can get
onto
it halfway
a
down,
napkin but, or something.
Okay, yeah.
And we'll butter then the bottom, shake it up, add a layer, butter it, shake it up. And like, so this equal distribution, like, you do not want to cross her
what
if
I
the
do
butter
is
all on top.
I stay at the pump. I take a huge mouthful of popcorn. Then I get under the pump, squirt the butter. Same, and I do it until it's
all
gone.
Isn't it funny that we'd make fun of you for that? That's exactly what we're doing. We're just delaying it.
Yeah. It's like that scene in Tommy Boy where he eats the fries and then squirts the ketchup packet into his mouth. Yeah. And David Spade goes, I can hear you getting fatter.
What's the difference? It's what we do on the table. I want to get rid of all this food shaming.
There is food shaming that is remarkable. For instance, if someone put ketchup on their mashed potatoes, that's weird. Like, what are you? Is that a pregnancy thing?
What's wrong with you? Yeah.
But if you put ketchup on your fries.
Another potato.
It's a potato, just in a different form. That's totally normal.
Guys, we are here to break down the walls of...
If someone put ketchup on their bacon, crazy. If you put ketchup on your bacon cheeseburger, amazing.
Amazing. Wow.
See?
Yep.
It's just like I added something to it. And what about the things we eat at certain meals?
You put gravy on your biscuit. You're crazy. Gravy on your toast. Wait, gravy on your biscuit's good.
Right.
Gravy on your toast. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
You're nuts.
Or like... there used to be, Gaffigan used to have a bit about wine in a wine glass is like sophisticated wine, and any other thing is like you're an alcoholic. Like if you see somebody drinking wine out of a coffee cup, you're like, okay.
What's wrong with this?
That's a Yahtzee shaker. You've got a problem. Just because it's not like a clear globular, it's shaped. It's nice.
Globular.
It's globular.
I like that.
You like that? It's a goblet, if you will. We need, globular. Like if you drink Diet Coke out of a goblet, that's a little bit weird.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Diet Coke needs to be out of like a solo cup or a little plastic tumbler.
Wow.
If you put Diet Coke in a wine glass, that's like, who do you think you are, really?
Yeah. Isn't it? Wow.
We just decided these rules. Nobody knows why.
You ever tried to drink water out of a coffee cup? My dad would do stuff like that.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
It's strange.
Ice water in like a coffee mug.
Yeah.
Feels like dirty.
They do it in... they do it on talk shows, but that's because they don't want you to see what's in, they don't want you to see the liquid, I guess. So you see Fallon, he'll drink from a, and it's always water. I hope it's water. I think it's water. Surely it's not. Surely he's not drinking coffee on the.
I would decaf.
Just drink a hot coffee.
Oh yeah,
while you talk to guests. I don't know.
You know, it's that weird like expectation of your pattern. You know, whatever your pattern is in your mind.
Wow. You ever be in the bathroom and you want to drink a water, but you go to the kitchen for the good water?
Yeah.
Same water.
Yeah.
Unless you're like filtering at the pump, which people don't really do that anymore.
What? Right. Well, we get ours out of the filtered refrigerator.
Refrigerator.
Yeah.
But I'm saying even back before filtered water, I remember going to the kitchen for the good water.
But see, I worked outside my whole life, and it was not uncommon on a really, really hot day all the time to go to the hose outside.
Yeah.
Or as some
and
of
you
us
could
was
taste,
saying,
you taste the hose in the water, too.
Yeah.
As the heat is breaking down the rubber particles. Like, who knows why we don't all have cancer.
Right.
We're just drinking hose water. It's got plastic beads in it.
Man, I can remember like weed eating all day and stopping at somebody else's apartment who had a hose. I'd be weed eating around their apartment building and stop and like hose my head down.
And you didn't ask permission.
Mouth.
It was just a given that they're okay with the hose being
Yeah, because I was
used.
Dying. You know, it was like, you know. But yeah, you just think, but if the hose was inside.
Yeah.
Which would be weird.
Yeah, why would there be?
But if it was, like, you'd think, like when you get to that table, I mean, yeah, it's very strange. What we used to do, by the way, Johnny, is we would take old 2-liter bottles and old gallon jugs, fill them up with water, put them in the deep freeze.
Yeah.
This is how we did it. So our whole crew of 20 people.
Oh, and over the course of the day, it would melt down. Yeah.
And so by like, mid-morning, you set it out and you start to get water. Of course, we'd all drink out of the same ones because it was a family business and stuff. No telling.
What you're saying is your family started Corona.
What I'm saying is, guys, we're spreading disease right now somehow. But we would have a lot of people that weren't family working. And, you'd kind of, I don't remember thinking about it being a big deal.
It's your tribe. It's this community.
Yeah. You're like, and you'd drink out of that thing all day long, even though it had like a Dr. Pepper sticker on it or whatever.
Yeah.
And
it's tap water you put in there too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
And you know what?
Can you drink tap water now?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, I can. Yeah.
It is different,
not
though.
In Florida.
You taste the alkaline
when
in
I go
it.
To Florida, I can't handle the Florida water.
Oh, because it smells or whatever? It's got the
Florida
sulfur?
Florida water has got, it's very sulfuric.
Yeah, so it's like you're drinking
globular.
Water. You drink water, but you smell a fart. You're like, am I drinking a fart? You can't get it out of your mind.
Right. Even though you know you're not, because it's an impossibility.
Yeah, how do you...
Right. I've right. tried.
That's an old children's book that I almost wrote called How Do You Drink a Fart? It's right after Who Moved My Cheese?
Get around,
who cut
kids.
The cheese?
Who cut cheese into my water?
Yeah.
You know, Laura laughs. So, I like sandwiches.
Okay.
Okay? But... a sandwich has to be a special event for me, and it's so funny. It's childhood. So we grew up, guys, and you probably heard my history. My dad ran a commercial lawn care business in addition to being a principal of 5A high school in Nashville, assistant principal, teacher for 30 years. So I don't know how he did it in addition to being a pastor. And he would get up in the morning sometimes at like 4, drive the big truck with the lawnmowers out to a site, leave it there for the crew, go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Work at school as a principal, do a basketball game that night, but come and mow in the afternoon, like, and come move our truck when we, you know, some of us were
moving site to site.
Yeah, because we had 7 apartment complexes. So this is my whole life.
And these people all couldn't drive the truck because what, they had DUIs? I don't understand why he's having to do this.
Some of us weren't old enough as part of it. Yeah. And so, like, when I
plus so child, like, so child labor.
Oh, I was working at 9. At 9, I started blowing sidewalks. And then at 11, I started
And weeding. Then at 11, they gave you a blower.
I started weeding.
You were just manually.
I had this. It's where I developed that asthma.
It's terrible.
Yeah. And so, like, I started weed eating, you know, full days and stuff at 11. And all the way, like, even in college, I'd come home in the summers. I'd come home, I needed money. All the way up to, like, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, maybe 5 years ago. And so when Dad finally, his health, you know, we couldn't run the business and he was ready, you know, to retire from that. But I'd go out there and help him and work. I still enjoy it. Like, I miss it now.
Your dad worked hard, man.
Like, I don't know why we say work like a dog. All my dogs are lazy.
That's true.
Like,
why
they
do we
lay
say
around
that?
The house all day. But my dad worked hard. So, like, I have all these experiences and we would stop in the middle of the day and we'd make sandwiches. They'd bring sandwich meat. And lunch meat and, you know, bread, and you would make sandwiches. Johnny, these are the components of a sandwich. I'm not sure if you're aware.
Can you explain to me again how do you make a sandwich?
You take your gravy, and so, like, Dad, we would stop, and some piece of equipment was always old equipment. Some piece of equipment was broken.
Right.
We'd sit under the trees, and Dad's fixing something. We're just covered in grease my whole life. Covered in grease, you know, fixing old equipment. And it was so much fun in some ways, like... we would, it was like these really, there's still very fond memories. We'd laugh and we'd have like this 30 minute.
Yeah, there's a community to it.
Yeah, a total 30 minute break together. And, you know, we're all gross and sweaty. My brother, my sister, all of us working together. Like, it was a big family thing. And so my mom was one of the best lawnmowers, trimmers that we had, you know. And so, and Dad and I were the weed eater guys.
Yeah.
Others. So my dad and I had like this special bond on weed eating. And so I remember though, like, that's work food.
Yeah.
Sandwiches are work
food. It's like
food.
A reward for hard work.
Well, it's not that. It's work food. It's I know I want to use this term. It's like dirty food. My hands, you don't wash your hands.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Hands are covered in grease. You just eat the sandwich.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple. And you have a
so
couple.
You've eaten oil.
Right.
Many, many
you
times.
You don't worry about it.
Quarts of oil.
Have you
over the course of your life.
Nutter butter afterwards, whatever. Like, just horrible food. No wonder I couldn't lose weight. I was working all these hours.
Yeah.
You know. And so, like, now... we'll be in the middle of the day, and I actually have finally gotten over the first, like, 15 years of marriage.
Yeah.
Laura's always like, she did it yesterday. We have this conversation all the time.
Uh-huh.
Like, last night, I was like, I'm super hungry, and I don't know why. And she says, go eat some lunch meat. Like, she always says that. Go eat some lunch meat. And it's like...
it's an insult.
For real, I'm like, I don't want to go in there and just start cramming cold lunch meat.
Yeah.
Because I know, but in truth, she's right. That's the easiest way to satiate the hunger.
Yes.
Without making a meal.
Yeah.
But that's work food. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't.
It's interesting.
I don't just go make sandwiches.
Think you've risen above the sandwich?
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
But you would get a sandwich at a restaurant.
Hot sandwich.
Here, to me, you're right.
The key is cold sandwich.
Cold
I don't do
cuts.
A lot of cold sandwiches.
Cold cheese. Ugh,
yep.
I don't like cold
She'll
cheese.
She'll do a cold
melt
sandwich.
Melt that cheese.
Sadie makes cold sandwiches. I don't know, man. It's like, and it's not like it's a bad memory. It's just I'm not, unless I'm outside, I don't do
You've been ruined for sandwiches. Your dad said something to me one time when he was talking about retiring from the school, from the principal job. I can't remember how it came up. He goes, I'm on the fence. And I go, well, yeah, I know it's tough. You've been doing this a long time. And he goes, Johnny, then he decided to do it. And this is when he had decided to do it. And I said, so you're just going to hang it up? And he goes, if I told you, remember this? He goes, if I told you I'd give you $1 to come to work or 50 cents to stay home, which one would you take? And I didn't even have to think about it, you know. I was like, if you give me 50 cents right now, and I mean, that's not even the rate. That's not even the real number, but I would take 50 cents.
Right.
And he was like, that's kind of where we're at now with retirement. So it was just kind of a funny way. I'd never heard it put that way.
Well, because Dad worked for Metro Schools back when he had a pension
and all that. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Pensions were a totally different ballgame, you know. And so but I remember when Dad retired, 2000, we had just gotten married. Like, it wasn't too many years after we'd been married. So 2000, probably 3 or 4.
Yeah.
You know, and he went on to work his other two jobs, you know, like for, I mean, it was like, I remember him saying one day, I don't see how I found time to go to work. I have so much work to do. Like, you know,
he's that guy too, that just, he would find other things to do. If you, the time, and you're that way, if there's more time, you have an urgency to fill it up with things, you know, I don't have that.
Well, yeah, it's super uncomfortable for me to be not productive.
Yeah.
That's actually part of my growth. I've learned a lot better, like, especially at night. Like, look, Laura and I have a lot of routines. There's a time with me and Sadie and Laura, whether it's watching America's Got Talent, sometimes we play Uno, sometimes, you know, like whatever that is, we're going to have this hour and a half.
And you didn't make anything and you didn't do anything that really mattered other than being with your family.
And I still get phone, like, I had to take a call of the night.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of calls right now. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I missed the time. If I do, I acknowledge it.
Yeah.
I'll come and go, Sadie, I know that's our time and I'm really sorry and I rarely have to miss it. I had to take this. And like, instead of just acting like that's normal, I make sure, I try to make a point, that's not normal or what I want. So I'll apologize to her because it's her time.
Yeah.
With me.
That's good.
In fact, right now, one thing COVID has done, and we talked about this before, Sadie doesn't want to run with me quite a bit. She's doing a lot of working out for her beach volleyball and other stuff, you know. But she doesn't really want to run with me much. She wants to walk. Mm-hmm. And so we were running a little bit.
She wants to be able to talk to you as you go.
So I said, look, I'm creating her summer schedule. I said, one thing I'm mandating we're going to do is me and you take a walk every day. And she was like, oh, Daddy. She's so excited. And it just warms my soul.
Right.
We go and she talks the whole time and I talk. And she actually listens. We're at that age now. She's about to turn 12.
So you can have actual dialogue.
Yeah. Like the other day, we walked really far, all the way, like probably 2 miles to the boat ramp and back, you know, kind of thing. And the conversation, she asked me, by the way, about communism. She asked me about fascism. I didn't bring up the word. I'm not even sure where she got fascism. She asked me about imperial.
She saw the patch on your jacket. She's like, what does this patch mean, Daddy? What's a communist?
She said she wanted to know about imperialism. Like, she didn't call it that, but she said, what about emperors? I think she called emperorism. Like, this was just on our walk. I couldn't keep up, and in fact I couldn't stop and write down all the things she asked me about. It was unbelievable. Like,
nice.
she was going through.
That's how I was so inquisitive as a kid. I wanted to know the reason for everything. And it's so funny, we were talking, I had dinner with my agent and his wife the other day, and at CAA, my agent, so he's like, you want to come over for dinner? So we go over to the house, and his wife is a counselor.
Yeah.
She's a family counselor. And so about halfway through the conversation, she started asking me questions. She was like, tell me more about that. And I was like, oh, no. I could feel myself kind of being counseled, you know?
Uh-huh.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah.
Well, was your dad like that? And I was like, oh, boy. And I stopped her. I was like, all right, lady. And we joked about it, you know. But then she said something about her son, who's 5. She said that he is a smasher. She goes, he's not a builder. He's a smasher.
Uh-huh.
And so we've had to kind of adapt we're trying to teach him about with his toys and to respect things and all that. And it wasn't like it was bad. It was just like, that's the compartments that she put children in. And I'd never heard that before. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was a total smasher as a kid.
Really?
If I found something, I would figure out how many parts was in it, and I would take it apart.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I would put it back together, but sometimes it would be just about taking it apart just for the sake of it.
Yep.
In fact, I tore my books, like the children's books she would get, I would tear the pages out of them. Like, before I could, like the ones with just pictures that your parents would read to you, you know, 1-2 years old. And then one time my mom told me that she got one that was made of cloth, and they were supposed to be indestructible because the pages were cloth.
Yeah.
And she says she came into my crib one day or whatever, or my old toddler bed or day bed, and I had all the pages were torn out and laid end to end. And I was so happy, and I was showing her, look what I did.
Wow.
Like, I deconstructed this, Mom. And so I started thinking about it, and I was like, And before I knew it, I was like counseling myself because she's just saying this about her kid. She was just telling us about her son. And I was like, oh my God, I'd never heard that term before, smasher. And I go, I'm still a smasher.
Yeah.
It's my job.
You deconstruct.
Everything I do is deconstruction. And I like to think I'm building because, well, I built a new hour of material. I'm building the show.
Yeah.
But the show is built on deconstruction of like whatever social norms are or... Yeah. You know, men and women are different and here's the ways and et cetera. Every dumb thing, even when we talk on this show, we're deconstructing racial issues. We're deconstructing why we feel the way we feel about things. And a minute ago, we just deconstructed why we eat certain things at certain times of day.
Yep.
Like, I'm a smasher. Just that's the way. So when you said it about Sadie, that's what she is. She's a smasher, even though she may not be destructive, but her mind is a smasher.
Yeah, she wants to know why.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too. So I know you don't ascribe to all these things, but I think we're far enough now I could say this. I think you're an Enneagram 6 with probably a really strong 7 wing.
Yeah.
Because I'm a 6. I think you and I have often...
Yeah.
You are going to be more fun than me. That's your strong...
Way more.
Way more. You're going to have... kidding, you got your strong...
You're very fun, John.
Your strong 7 wing and a 7.
I feel less guilt about fun than you do, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I have a strong... I have probably equal 7 and 5 wing. I mean, yeah. I got a 7, but 5 is very like analytical, and you probably have some 5, too. A lot of
I think
of
I can have fun and be like, man, that was fun. And I think you have the fun and go, man, that was fun. What could I have been doing with that time that would leave a relic for the next generation
what
or is, whatever?
What did my legacy... How did it affect it? Yeah. It's a... But the thing about me, and it's not all... Again, all 6s aren't the same kind of thing. But from what you were saying... The big word for me, even in my recovery program I'm in, is safety.
Uh-huh.
And it's not because I'm not courageous. I do a lot of really courageous things. Let me tell you something. I pitched a book and got turned down, by the way, by one publisher. It's at 2 more. It still hurts.
Yeah.
It still hurts. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I still pray and I still like it. You know, I told someone, well, got rejected. It's still probably one yes. It used to be one yes to every 50 no's. And now it's probably one yes to every 15, you know, no's. It's still a lot more no's. And, but loyalists is what 6 is. And loyalists, it's kind of a deceptive term. They're super loyal to people, but they're also super loyal to systems as long as they trust the system to be just, but they will actually deconstruct. So you remember me at the staff table a lot, okay? Mm-hmm. And you and I both did this when you were on staff here. This has been something I've had to grow healthier in.
Yeah.
My first inclination as someone who, what I say is I'm forecasting.
Right.
And I see things. When someone brings an idea, immediately
you see
my
the 99
mind,
problems yeah, ahead.
I go a mile ahead of where you're thinking and start thinking of all that could go wrong, which is very... It could be very, very critical, and can that's the negative side. It could be very, I don't listen anymore to the fullness, or I don't allow it to breathe for a second. You know,
right.
I just immediately start pointing out what's wrong with it. So I had to stop doing that. Some, I even say that. God, we're gonna have a meeting, just ideas. We may not take them all, but let's not shoot them down. Let's just let it ride. That's really for me, you know, because I know I'm the first one, and so, but. If I begin to perceive a system that I'm, because systems bring me safety.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I see a leadership issue that I'm a part of, or I see a system I've helped to create that has something out of alignment in it, it becomes unsafe for me. This is not going to sustain us. So I'm the first one within the system to be loyal to the people to help them, you know, and they can have as much. As many faults as they want.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me for people to have faults. It really, really doesn't. It's when your faults, when you're not willing to look at them and how they affect our system together.
Yeah.
Then I get super now defensive of the system, and I will want to push us forward to go, we got to look at this. But it's really, and some of that helps the organization, but some of that is, I'm not safe until you and I are both on the same page in this system.
Right.
So it is a deconstruction. It's a... I'm not going to let this, because I can see, and I'll tell Andrew all the time, and he'll probably laugh when he listens to this. In my mind,
yeah,
a lot of things that have gone wrong over the years, I predicted 2 years early. And then I get super defensive when it finally happens and nobody listened to me. And then I get all, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. Which is a really mature, wonderful place to be. People love it.
The best in relationships.
Yeah. You want to be saying, but it's not because I want to be right. It's because that's my role here. It's how I can't, I'm made this way to say, hey guys, we're going to, you know, I mean, there we lost a lot of people out of the church over the years. There was a time, even when I was still the youth pastor, that I looked at the staff and said, we will lose every single one of these families, and I named them.
Yeah.
We will lose these families, and I'm telling you why. I'm telling you because I can see issues with the way we've done youth ministry, that I can see issues with their commitment. I can see that the moment this situation changes, it's not a safe system. The moment the situation changes, there's not enough other things left to hold them. I'm telling you. And I would go to the families and tell them. I didn't know, though, how to put it into healthy terms or lead them to something better. I just knew it was wrong. For years, Andrew and I both, it drove me crazy. I knew something was wrong because I'd taken it apart. And I don't know, though, how to put it back together better you know, at that time in life. And I'm learning now. And by the way, they all left. Minus one. I think probably out of 20, 19 of them did. And then and it's very like unnerving because now you feel like you need to be the watchdog. Like, that's my role here is to be.
Right. I'm the gatekeeper of,
yeah. And then you become prideful and you become paranoid. And so the healthy place is to go, I can't control it. That's the healthy place. I can't control all that, but there are parts I can affect. So just interesting how that plays.
Yeah, it's heavy. And like you said, I think that I see that because even the way we're dealing now with the racial conversation in America, we were talking about this at lunch about how there was a podcast that I watch and there was a white host who's a comedian named Neil Brennan. And he was saying, you know, at this point, you have to either look at the data and say, I believe in white supremacy, or I believe the system is rigged. Like, you really have to fall in, because the data shows mass incarceration, the data shows poverty, it shows all these things, and you either have to go, the system is broken, or white supremacy is real, and the reason that's, in other words, the people that go, well, they're being imprisoned more because they're committing more crimes. Like, you either have to fall on that side of the thing of like, this is just a lesser population, and they're acting on their own, like they're fulfilling they're doing the dance of their own DNA, or the system we put in place has led to these results. And you can't really, that's the conversation that you and I are having.
Right.
We're having for the first time go, wow. And so that's why. So I agree with you by saying when the system made me feel safe, I could ignore these things. And now I feel like the system is causing this.
Yeah.
So I am not going to be loyal in the same way that I told you this. If there's a theme that we keep coming back to, which I think some people are uncomfortable with in this podcast, it's what I would call jingoism, what some people would call nationalism. I would call a farther move past nationalism to what they call jingoism, which is where you just kind of invoke the name of America for like points and you kind of create a fear of anyone that's not with you, where you're with us or you're against us, love it or leave it. You create those false narratives and those false dichotomies. And we have a running theme in this show of like that jingoism got weaved into the tapestry of evangelical culture. And we're now reaping the harvest of that.
Yeah.
Because it feels like when you attack this, you're attacking America. You're attacking American ideals. When it's like, no. This is about the kingdom. I'm showing you a kingdom principle, and it happens to now conflict with what you thought was American culture. But I can show you now that it's not even, it's just a mirage you've been sold. So what I'm saying is, I'm coming to grips with people matter more than those systems. Yeah. And I'm willing to part ways, even if it means I lose friends. So I'm loyal to people. But when I see that an idea or a system is corrupt and it needs to be fixed, I go, let's reverse course. Like, that's what progress is.
Yeah, we can't settle on that. And you're saying that, I can be loyal to imperfect people. I cannot be loyal to injustice. And there's that, I think there's the line. Because, and I think this term systemic is so key. It gets thrown around a lot. You and I were talking at lunch about this, and my wife and I were talking yesterday. Systemic thought is almost antithetical to modern evangelical Christian thought. Most, even into theology, if you ask people today, and think about the terms you hear in church over our lifetime, mm-hmm. okay, especially late 80s through 90s and how this affected us. Do you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? Those are the terms. And they're good terms.
Yeah.
Have you asked Jesus into your heart? Have you, like, there's this, and I was having this conversation with a staff member yesterday. You know, I stopped saying that to people now as a pastor. And it may seem like semantics to somebody, but I realized somewhere along the way, if I really believe the Bible, then the subject of the sentence is never me in terms of the initiation to the things that regenerate a life.
Yeah.
If I was dead in my trespasses when Christ came and died, dead people don't take action.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I didn't meet God halfway.
Right. It wasn't like, yeah.
We're running to each other across a field and yeah. He comes running, I come running, and then we meet and then he saved me. It's like, no.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were buried 6 feet under and he dug you up.
Yeah.
And breathed life into you. That's the message of the gospel. And it's super like, people go, well,
why does it matter? Well, it matters because if you believe that you had a role, then you believe that you can have a bigger role. And you believe that the person next to you who's not doing as much, they're less saved than you. That's what comes from that systemic thought. Yeah.
That question you always ask, do you really believe someone out there needs grace more than you do? You ask yourself the honest question. Yeah. The answer is, for most of my life, absolutely. I never would have theologically said it, but emotionally I certainly was there. Right. And so like now what I say is, you know, when I answered Jesus's invitation, when he invited me into life, mm-hmm. I did have a role to answer. I could have said, no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't initiate, you know, the conversation, but that's the difference. And there's actually a lot out of like the Greek Orthodox and some of the more, liturgical traditions that go back in the Eastern, we're from the Western church, whether Protestants realize it or not, we're mostly an offshoot. Protestant comes out of the Western Catholic tradition mm-hmm. and then obviously broke away. The Eastern church sort of acknowledges more of the collective systemic Christianity, mm-hmm. systemic gospel thoughts, which is not just about individual. It doesn't take away the individual's need to respond. But if you think about the way God spoke in the Old Testament a lot, especially, and how even Jesus spoke to his disciples, it was that this would be a blessing to all nations, to all peoples, plural. Like there was this thought of, this is not just about me, but that nationalism and American, I guess, again, idealism says, you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that yeah. all men are created equal, which obviously the Constitution goes on to say that certain men are 3/5 of a man. And then I was reading the judicial decision from the Dred Scott case
yeah.
in one of the books I'm reading, and just reading what the Supreme Court Chief Justice said, that, and this was in right before the Civil War in the 1850s, literally the man says, so the Supreme Court upholds to say, nope, because a slave had been living in a free state and was suing for his freedom because he technically was in a free state, thought he had. Instead of the judge ruling on whether or not he had the right mm-hmm. because of living in a free state to be free, instead he ruled, because you're a black man, you are inferior to whites, and you do not, the law does not protect you because mm-hmm. you are not an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he ruled. You're not a full human. So you don't get, this law doesn't protect you. Like, it was devastating to
right.
the cause of abolition. I mean, that's 1850. That's like 10 years before. I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact year, but you begin to realize he was already interpreting American constitutional thought
right.
based upon individual value and freedom.
Right.
You, because
I have it, you don't.
Yep. Because of who you are, you don't get it. It wasn't about all. And so you see that had crept in somewhere out of Enlightenment thinking, which brought a lot of good thoughts, but also brought a lot of individual thoughts, that now freedom, like we're saying, freedom is now is not about the collective good.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at Jewish law, it's all about collective good. It's
right.
all about collective good. And when you look at American law, it's now all about individual good. And protecting individual freedoms. And, you know, you even look at it in the COVID thing. And I'm not going pro mask or anti mask here, guys. I'm just saying.
Here we go.
Some people right now are saying it's my freedom and my right to not have to wear a mask if I don't want to. But it doesn't matter if you happen to be pre-symptomatic and you might infringe upon someone else's freedoms by not. So again, forget about the mask conversation.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing out where we're defining.
Yeah, our individualism trumps your. Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Yeah. It is an American viewpoint.
It's the product of that individualism, though. It definitely is. That viewpoint is a product of individualism. Whether you say it's good or bad, I think there's a lot of things that have come from individualism. But yeah, there's that thing of like being part of a whole, which is church culture, really, if you look at where it started.
Yeah.
Like, and why it is destined to conflict at some point with American culture. Because it, you know, even though we have, you know, out of many, one, at some point it's about the American dream, which is start a business, get a home, get rich, you know, protect yourself from all the bad things. Like, that's really the American dream, is insulation. It's not community. You know what I'm saying? Like, the dream is to be somewhere where the bad things can't get to you and you have so much money that you can just write a check and the problems go away. That's what we were taught.
Right.
And so this idea that, so the church is, if you look at the real goal of the church, it's the anterior. It's about community. I think of it in terms of what I used to remember when I would read about Galileo, who was persecuted for daring to think that the earth was not the center of the known universe,
right,
and that the sun revolved around us. He instead looked through his telescope and saw tons of other things. And he figured out that we were just a part of this system that revolved around something else. And it was an offensive thing to believe that.
Yeah.
You know, it was almost like he was a witch. He was accused of witchcraft for thinking that. It was so crazy because clearly we're the center of it.
Right.
And it's like when you realize you're not the center, even as we were talking about this, about how we're trying to move the conversation forward as white people who have a voice, because I don't want to just be silent. But there is a time to elevate voices of color, which I've tried to do. And instead of just being like, we should be the ones to decide how this conversation happens.
Right.
Like thinking that we should lead the conversation.
Yeah.
That's white privilege all its own. So it's like, I'm trying to tread that line and speak up when I can, but also listen. And it's hard. And I'm sure I've made mistakes.
Oh yeah.
But they come from a pure heart, I believe. I think they come from a pure place.
You know, the great thing is everybody feels like they're coming from a pure heart. And the good news about the actual gospel, and I'm sorry I got to say that, the actual gospel that's a systemic and an individual gospel that affects people as a whole. In fact, if you really look at the root of the language in it, the root of the language of the gospel is there's only one full commandment that encapsulates all the rest. And it's that it's not that you go to church and it's not that you pray more and all those things. Those are just disciplines upon top of this foundation. The foundation is it's all based upon a constant reflection upon, do you really believe that Jesus radically loves you, likes you, cares for you, is on your side, like came to give his life so that you wouldn't have to, like would run 100,000 miles to save you, would leave the 99, like those who suffer, those who struggle, that's a hard belief.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, that's what Jesus came to proclaim. If you go especially to the book of John, all of his I am statements, you know, I am this bread of life so that you won't hunger anymore. I am this water that you won't thirst anymore. I am, you know, he just constantly, I came that you might have life and it might be really, really full. I came not to condemn. I came that you might have life and abundantly. So it's just replete, and it's the hardest thing to believe. You'll spend your whole life. The work of a disciple, I believe, starts there. Every day, I got to start there again. I don't believe that. In myself, I like, it's like that, you talk about, somebody talk about sanctification, they use that image of somebody falling down
an up escalator.
Yeah.
They're just, if you've ever seen that GIF, it's so perfect. This guy's just, he trips at the beginning of stepping on and then begins to fall while being carried up, and he falls down for 3 minutes as the escalator carries him up, and he finally gets to the top, but he's falling the whole time.
And you can't take any credit for going up.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of the whole Jesus thing. In fact, the number one step, by the way, in regen is that I have sinful patterns that I am, and this is very hard for me, I have sinful patterns that I am powerless to manage or overcome under my own power. And the truth is, I don't really believe that because I'm pretty good. Right.
You're a good manager.
And I'm great at managing problems and mitigating problems and forecasting problems. And if you give me enough time, I'll work this out. And when you come to grips with what the Bible says in Romans 7, and that is that, they'd be so proud of me because I'm supposed to memorize this one. Romans 7:18 says, "For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh, for I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out." So if we were to believe that, I have the desire, like you said, my heart's right, whatever that means. It doesn't mean my heart's right, it just means I have a desire to do good too, in addition to the bad that I have a desire to do.
Right.
There's a good thing in there. I don't have the ability scripturally to carry it out. Like if you really take that, then that's, and I think that's part of the deal. If your Christianity is based upon this individual idea that as long as I got good intentions, I didn't mean to offend somebody. I didn't mean to be a Pharisee for a lot of my life. I didn't mean those things. Therefore, since I didn't mean them, they don't count. Like somewhere along the line, I started going, I don't have any of those legs to stand on anymore. And that was the most liberating thing, but we think it's going to kill us. It's the most liberating moment to go, I'm really not good. Like I was told my whole life I was a good guy. Like that's just a behavioral evaluation.
Yeah.
That's not a character, a true character evaluation. I might be well behaved, you know, compared to others and all those things. I might have done good things, but we're talking about a different kind of goodness. And like there's freedom there to go, wow, the gospel as a whole, of which, like you said, I'm revolving around something. I'm a lot smaller, and that's not bad news. If I'm so much smaller and God still found me that valuable.
And you're not in control of it.
No.
That's the other part of it.
Yeah.
It's like, think about if you just, I can't remember how fast the world is rotating right now. It's like thousands of miles per hour.
Right.
Like if you sat and thought about that, or if you sat and thought about, we've talked about this before, about if you sat and thought about how many breaths you need to breathe to stay alive. And if you ever start focusing on your breath, it's weird. You get this, it's almost like you can make yourself have a panic attack. Yep. Don't forget to breathe. Don't forget to blink. Your eyes could dry out.
Yep.
But you're not in control of it. It's involuntary. And like, that's what you have to think of when you think of like the systems of the gospel. It's like, I made this one little choice to accept. And everything else is just, I'm being carried along and hopefully I'm going to get upward and onward and forward. And you just, you know, but you do, I mean, I do believe you have to keep making the decision to keep following.
Yeah.
But this idea that like, I'm following better than you, like that is so, I mean, I think I believed that. Even if I didn't say it, I think I believed that for a long time.
No, absolutely. It's this like feeling of confidence in, I guess, for two sixes, I think we are. Not that you're going to let me label you that.
I'll take the test, John.
Confidence, we need to read a book. That's better than the test. Because the test could be faulty. But when we take comfort in the systems and in like the ritual, which I think a lot, by the way, probably 40%, they say some of people are sixes. They take comfort in, they're loyalists and they take comfort in systems and the kind of people you want on your team, but they'll also call you to it if they think it's unjust, all those things. But think about it, man. Yeah, if I could just make sure I pray enough and read enough. And for me, it was like, I'm going to outrun sin with my knowledge. I'm going to outlearn it. I'm going to beat it. And I'm going to use all the things that God's given me that are good. And it means a lot of good came out of that in terms of learning. And there's, I have access to scriptures. I'm glad I memorized and all those things that are in me. God brings good out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But just constantly feeling separated. I never believed God liked me.
Yeah.
Like he endured me. He had to love me because he's God. It was that kind of thing. And that's not a father relationship that we see scripturally, where the real words are Abba. We take that and make it so like emotional, but it's really true that he said, that Jesus says to his disciples, look, as the Father loves me, now the Father loves you because of me. You have this access to the Father like I have, you know, and like that's so radical. And that's something you didn't do. You didn't go individually get there. That systemic realizing someone else initiated, someone else is spinning, someone else is doing the work that really matters, and you have a role, but it's not gonna. I right now comfort Christians who feel. I read a post this morning, Johnny. We always say don't want to get political, you know, and I'm gonna just quote some things that it was said. It's from a Christian, and it said, it was some super offensive memes, by the way. One had a black hand holding a gun up against another black guy's head, because it was talking about us focusing not on racism, but instead what are we missing on black-on-black crime.
Yeah.
And the fact that we could repost that and not find it offensive, I don't care what color somebody is, to think that pointing a gun at somebody's head as a meme to make a point, to try to prove that you don't need to look at racism, when you've gone there, I go, guys, you know, like that. And it was a kid, by the way. It was like a, it looked like a 15-year-old with a gun to his head.
Yeah.
I don't, again, I'm just like, guys, you know, like that. That's when I've now lost my way a little bit, probably of even understanding that that's not political correctness.
Right.
Like, that's not, I don't care who it is. You put my kid up there with a gun to their head, you're going to hear from me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's somebody's kid. So stop it.
Yeah. And you're using it to score political points or whatever.
Right. To make a point.
With people who already feel the same way you do. Like, nobody's ever changed their mind because of a meme. It's always about, like, finding who your tribe is. So you can get more deeply entrenched in your own idea. Yep. Like, it's just an echo chamber at that point.
And it's okay to have ideas, but if you, it is a great question. Great question. I had this conversation with my mom the other day. It was great. She's like, that's good. Ask yourself, Johnny, this question. And I invite all readers, or excuse me, listeners and readers, go buy the book and then ask yourself this question.
Read the descriptions, though, because I write them.
Yeah, Johnny's descriptions are really funny. Ask yourself this question.
Yeah.
When is the last time you changed your mind about something significant? If you really ponder that question for 5 minutes and you can't think of something major in life, history, politics, a retelling of history, if you have not changed your mind in a long, long time about something significant, then realize that there may be something wrong with your learning process. I don't know anybody who's a professor. I don't know anybody.
Yeah, think about science. It's all about disproving the last thing with your next new test.
Yeah.
This new, we made a hypothesis. We did the testing. Like, they used to say that on Mythbusters. They would be like, catastrophic failure is still a, it's a usable data.
Yes.
You know, we know now what doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, the car crashed or whatever they, you know, the thing, the bomb didn't explode. That's usable data. And so, yeah, sometimes we don't, we're like, no, I'm still going to hold to my hypothesis.
Because it hurts, it hurts too bad to think I might have been wrong. When I think God, the real gospel says being wrong is literally, it's the only condition by which you can come to Christ.
Yeah.
There's only one condition. You can't earn it. There's only one condition for repentance, if you want to use that scriptural term.
Yeah.
One condition is you got to admit that you need it. Like, if you come like, yeah, I probably don't need this, but I, you know, insurance and make sure. There's no heart like in that.
Yeah.
But when you come and go, wow, you know, like, I don't get this. I'm broken. I have things I cannot. And it just sounds, people just think I sound guilty or whatever. Like, I don't feel guilty about that. I feel that's the reality, if you read the Bible, of the gospel experience. And if I can't look back and say there's something in my life that I changed on, that I'm not growing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not growing. Maybe there's things that I haven't changed on, but there's some, not everything. We want to go to the extremes. There's some things I believed at childhood that are still true. And there are some things I believe in childhood that were childish, you know, and like it's, and if I don't evaluate and allow other thoughts and processes, like the idea of someone giving you an alternate viewpoint should not be offensive. It is the, it's called conversation. It's called dialogue. It is the very epicenter of the human experience. It's how your children learn because they think that junk food is all they should eat.
Yeah.
But you, if they're so offended that you can't tell them you should also have this, then they can never learn that for like, well, you know, he feels really strongly about his truth, you know, that junk food. Well, his truth, you know, there could be added to. Junk food has a place in his diet. It doesn't need to be where it is, you know. So anyway,
I feel like that was, that last part was pointed at me.
Johnny, I think you know why I've called you here. How many years do I have to talk about this junk food?
I put ketchup on the mashed potatoes, but then I add fries. So I feel like that balances it out.
It does.
Yeah.
It does, as long as you...
I call it a ketchup sandwich, and I
You know
pick
I can't eat sandwiches unless you warm it up.
You got to put some oil on it.
I will heat a sandwich.
Some motor oil.
I will heat a sandwich and eat it all day long.
I don't know. I had the French dip for lunch, and I enjoy the French dip.
Yeah.
And, but then you, it's just a very, it's a messy, the dripping and the, but there's something about it. I don't know.
You could have just eaten the sandwich and then drank the au jus.
That's true. You take a big bite of the sandwich and drink some onion soup or whatever the au jus is.
I mean, what's the difference, really?
You know? I don't know, John. We'll figure it out.
Breaking down all these societal thoughts about all of it, Johnny.
Like, try to have a hamburger in the morning. You're crazy. Okay. Sausage biscuit, totally normal.
Do you know what I have for breakfast this morning?
A hamburger?
Worse. You take a wild guess. Oh, you could guess it.
Half a bag of pork rinds.
No.
I don't know, John.
I had wings.
You had wings for breakfast?
Yeah. I'll tell you why. It's Thursday. Everybody, listen. I'm going to tell you about a restaurant in the Hermitage
area.
Not
a sponsor.
Not a sponsor. But if you live in the Nashville area, there's a restaurant called JB's Poorhouse. P-O-U-R, Johnny.
Okay. It's a homonym. It's a play on words. Or a poor meaning booze.
A drink as well. And they have, that's where Sadie's beach courts are. So we're over there all the time.
Yeah.
Thursday night, 60-cent wing night.
See right there, she's playing volleyball out front. You're playing Kenny Loggins soundtrack, just like in the Top Gun, playing with the boys.
Yeah.
Except it's with the girls.
Yeah. I take my shirt off, look just like Tom Cruise.
Then you do some weird high-five move with Laura.
Right, right. Actually, she doesn't have volleyball on Thursdays usually. I just drive over there.
To get how many wings?
Do you want to know how many?
I think you've told me before how many you order at a time. Isn't it like 70?
I get 70 wings.
That's crazy.
I get 70 wings for like $35. Sure. Johnny, listen.
That's almost 50 cents each.
Yeah, for some reason, I feel like I get it less than 60. But they know me now. They'll be like, hey, Mr. Driver, are you getting 70 tonight? Like, they know when I call. So
they call you Mr. 70.
I'll go.
That's got to be a record, right, for a one person. You're like, hey, how was the big pool party? And you're like, there was no party. I sat.
I am the pool party.
I sat alone and stared into the abyss while I ate 70 chicken wings.
So here's why. All right. I get 70 wings. So yeah. First of all, there are four of us in our house.
Yes. Okay?
So we eat the wings on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And then I eat off of that pack of wings for the next week.
But reheated wings aren't as good. What are you reheating them? Are you hitting an air fryer? What are you doing?
Air fryer.
Air fryer.
And they're just like they were new, Johnny.
Okay.
You put them in there, crisp them right up a little bit. It's so good. So this morning, though, I had not eaten as many over the course, but I ended up having like five lunches out of it. So I spend like $50 probably total after tax.
Sure.
And I eat probably six meals off of it.
But you could just get a normal human amount of wings and then just go back.
I don't want to go back. It's the other side of town.
Like, why not get 140 then, John?
During the quarantine, this is great because I can
go
to
my 320. The normal order, the standing order, no. 320 wings. Now I'm being ridiculous.
We have all of
70
these,
wings, John.
We have all of these traditions, though, during the quarantine, especially. Okay. Like it's wing night with my mom, my daughter, and my wife. We all enjoy that, and yeah, we kind of get excited. So all right. And sometimes Laura will ride with me. We get a drive. We love to drive and talk.
It's true. Going out for a drive has really come back during Corona. Have you noticed that?
Oh, it's awesome.
It's like somebody did a video about that. It's like we're all dogs now. You want to go for a ride? We're like, yeah, we'll go for a ride. You want to go for a walk? I'd love to go for a walk. We get so excited. You jingle the keys. Yeah. Walkies.
Oh, I was like, hey, honey, you want to ride with me? Yes, please. Like, you know, she's finishing up a call or whatever. So, yeah. But this morning I had a few extra Largos. We're throwing those out because we're getting new wings tonight, right? I was like, throwing them out? They're still
throwing
good.
Them in my gullet.
And so I did. I, out of principle, put a bunch of wings into the microwave. Not even the air fryer. It was too early to get it out. And I ate wings for breakfast. It's just, wow, Johnny, what's the big deal?
I would never judge you, John.
There's no difference.
Because I feel like the system by which I would have judged you earlier,
it's been broken down.
I've learned.
Mm-hmm. You changed your mind.
It's a broken system.
Yeah.
And I stand with you against my anti-wing brothers and sisters.
Right.
I would agree with you on 9 things out of 10, but this is where we part ways.
Yeah.
Wings for breakfast are okay with me.
Because why not, Johnny? Why have we been told wings can only
be just spicy chicken in the morning? You would have a spicy chicken biscuit.
It's just chicken. If you go to Chick-fil-A, you're like, we can't eat chicken for breakfast.
It's a lot of buffalo sauce for the morning, though, if you're talking about your normal morning constitution.
Have you ever
your habits.
Speaking of constitution.
How did that word get hung up with bathroom?
I love that.
Your morning constitution is a whole different thing.
I heard the British say that your morning constitutionals. That's even another
word. Constitutionals.
Yeah,
okay. After you take your vitamins.
Right. Vitamins and constitutionals. And we're going to cross this.
Set your schedule for the day.
Careen into this crevasse.
Oh. Yeah. No, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. So
while you're doing your constitutional.
I don't know how the buffalo, they weren't highly spicy.
Yes.
But you know, you can have a Bloody Mary, which is a spicy tomato
buffalo
drink.
Buffalo sauce affects some more than others, and I think you've just, all your senses are numb now from all the keto. So like buffalo sauce just is like candy now to you.
Yeah, I can have spicy. Yeah, yeah, it's not spicy. But you, again, you drink a spicy tomato drink called a Bloody Mary for breakfast. You can get that. That's a normal thing. So how come that's not with the Worcestershire sauce in it? Like,
that's true.
How do you? Why do people think that that's normal? Oh, it could bring me some spicy tomato juice for breakfast. You know what I'm saying,
uh-huh,
Johnny?
Uh huh.
Man, let me tell you.
We're changing the world.
Eat wings for breakfast and then change your mind
we
about
need to get
things.
The Poorhouse as a sponsor.
I think
then you could get your 70 wings gratis.
Oh, my gosh. What if I agreed to every time we record the podcast, you and I will 70 eat wings and talk about how good they are?
There used to be a comedy show in Nashville called Comedy Cataclysm, and it was at Prince's Hot Chicken.
Oh, wow.
And the thing was, you'd eat hot chicken and then go up and do comedy.
Ooh.
With no water.
Ooh.
And so it would change. They would just see how it affected your delivery of the comedy.
Did you ever have Francis?
Mm-mm.
Okay,
I've had Hattie B's, though.
So when here's what's funny. So I grew up in not the best part of Nashville.
Yeah.
And we used to go bowling in a really not great part of Nashville where Prince's Hot Chicken was.
The original.
Yeah. And like it was when you say hole in the wall. Like it was, you know. It's right next to the bowling alley. So I've been there my whole life. I never had Prince's Hot Chicken. Like, I remember being at that bowling alley one night. I remember a car was running out front. I watched a guy walk up with a tire iron and smash the back windshield out.
Yeah, and you're like, this isn't the best place.
I was like, yeah. So that just was normal.
I'll take my chicken to go, please.
It was normal, you know. I mean, that was where we grew up, you know. And you just, you know, there was stuff happening in that side. That was our side of town. Like, it was, you know, it's just okay. You know, just be smart and stay safe. And so when I moved back, after college, a guy from church took me to Prince's. I was like, guys, this is next door to where I grew up, literally. And I ate hot chicken, maybe the mild, because I like hot chili and all that back then especially.
Right.
Dude, never again.
Set you up. It set you on fire.
Oh, and I don't mean to be graphic.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you something. It hurts.
It's what comes out of a man that defiles him. That's scripture.
I'll tell you that. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it hurt all around, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
For days.
Ring of fire.
Yeah, like, I can't... I can't, like, it was not enjoyable.
No.
Like, I just, like, I don't know why
that
we label our entire city after this piece of chicken.
Well,
it's painful.
I don't know. It's cultural. It's like some people love spicy stuff. I get Hattie B's, but I got the, like, honey barbecue that's, like, more Chipotle. It's milder. It's got a warmth to it, but it doesn't, like, this is going to ruin my night.
Yeah, it ruined a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, I don't, and I know, listen, I'm, you guys know I'm super masculine. Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But even then, I was like, man, this is not fun. Like, when food hurts, when it hurts in your mouth, you can't taste anything else I don't get it. I don't get it, Johnny.
Well, I don't know. You're doing the right thing, though. You're starting with the chicken wings and you work your way up. One day, Prince's for breakfast, just to kick off the day.
Well, there would be your constitutionals. That would
would be.
You would like, be.
I'm not. Yeah, I'm not going to be around people the rest of the day.
I'm going to do a Prince's hot chicken cleanse. That's what we need to do.
Yeah,
yeah. We're going to only
it is
eat
a cleanse.
It
yeah.
for like a couple days. And like,
I had a joke one time where it was like that. It was like a one liner. It was something like, "Have you ever noticed that I'm on a juice cleanse?" Sounds a lot like I'm going to lose friends. It's true. Yeah. If you know somebody on a juice cleanse, they're pretty insufferable because they talk about it every 5 minutes and they...
Sadie has a real big sweet tooth and she is also cooking. She made homemade cupcakes twice over the weekend.
Okay.
Like made her own.
That's not going to help anything.
Made her own.
Those are bad for you.
Her own icing, like from scratch. Like she's really good in the kitchen. And so she eats, she loves sweets. She woke up the other morning, came out. I was out on the deck doing some morning stuff. She came out and said, "Dad, I think I want to do a juice cleanse."
Okay.
And I said, "Okay." And she's like, "No, she doesn't eat enough food as it is." Mm-hmm. And she eats a lot of sweets.
Yeah, what is she cleansing of?
When I really got down to it, with her mind, she knows she needs more vegetables. So she's going to blend them up.
Right.
And drink them almost like to have a net effect to offset all of the other sugar she's not going to stop eating.
Yeah.
So it was very much like
I'm not going to stop eating the sugar. Right. I'm just going to add vegetables to it.
It's like, I'm not sure you understand the cleanse part. I was like,
which is kind of what the green smoothies are, because you have to sweeten them up to make them.
Yeah.
You know, if you see a green smoothie and they're like, "What's in this that makes me be able to palate this?" They go, "Oh, it's got pear juice." And you're like, well, that's not.
Right. Tons of sugar.
Or apple juice or whatever. Yeah. They make it to where you. Because if you just drank green.
Yeah.
You gag, right?
Somebody's yelling
somebody's
right now.
Somebody can do it, but I'm telling you, every green drink I've ever had, there was a sweetness to it because they've added some kind of, we're going to make this edible to you.
Do you ever have wheatgrass?
Oh, yeah.
Remember we had Kiva juice?
Kiva juice. They give you the wheatgrass shots. And it's like you just went out to your yard and grabbed a handful of grass.
You just literally drank grass. Like, they cut it. Remember, they had it growing.
Uh-huh.
They cut it.
Blend it up.
But I will say this. It was like, I remember...
I think it was to sell the smoothies, because you go, I need something to get the taste out of my mouth. They go, large peach slice plus coming up. And then they charge you $12 for that. And you're just like, right. I'll pay anything to get this out of my mouth.
Well, as a guy who mowed grass my whole life, I was used to the taste of grass a little bit. I was like, this is literally...
It's very familiar.
Grass. Yeah.
It brought you back.
But I will say this. I remember they said it will... It's almost... it sounds like melatonin or something's in it. It was supposed to make you sleep better.
Yeah.
I remember one time, a Sunday, a bunch of us, I don't know, we went with some kids or something, still youth pastors, and went and got it, and I had a shot of wheatgrass.
Right.
And I went home and, like, fell asleep like a dead guy.
Really?
Like, yeah. Like, I couldn't wake up. Like, it was like, oh my gosh. It, like, set my...
Maybe that's why cow tipping is so easy.
I need...
These cows... Think about it. They're already a little bit out of it. You walk up, boom, give them a shove. They're like, thank you. I needed. I'm tired of standing.
Wow. Don't you wish you could sleep standing up like a cow?
How do you know I don't?
It's true. I've never seen you in a cow.
Well, we've shared hotel rooms before, though.
No, you don't sleep at all.
No.
You just scream
night terrors.
All night. Like, the funniest night terror, we're going to get off the air. The funniest night terror we probably told before is you and I. Yeah. Well, there's two. One, we were in Panama. We've been digging in a hole all week.
Yeah.
And
we were digging a latrine that was like, it went 8 feet deep and it was like 4 foot by 6 foot wide. And we're in this hole.
I think we ended up digging it like 12.
I don't know, but we were down so far in,
you had to get a ladder.
You had to get help to get out of it. Yeah.
And we've been sick all week. And so we finally went to this hotel to go home the next day. And you woke up and said, John, are you in here with me?
Right.
Which, we're in a hotel room. I was like,
Yeah, dummy.
Yeah. And in your mind, we were in the hole.
When I looked up and opened my eyes, the night terror was that we were in the hole. And I was looking around. It was just dirt everywhere, mud. And I just was looking. And then the only thing that pulled me out of it, because you were like, yeah, I'm here with you. And I was like, oh, no. I said, oh, no. I felt so bad that you were with me. And I remember scanning the walls. It was like dirt, 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 flat screen television, mud, dirt. And I was like, that's weird. And that's what pulled me out of it, was the hotel room had a TV on the wall. And I was like, well, that doesn't seem,
wow,
that doesn't fit.
That's a nice.
And the other
hole.
Night terror I had with you in the room, I've had several. Well, no, there's two other ones. One was, I triggered you because I saw a
Andrew
flame.
Was with
I saw fire coming out of the outlet in our hotel room. I was dreaming about a fire happening. And I saw it. Like, you open your eyes, but it's still happening. The dream is still happening. And I can't remember what I said, and it's on fire. And you were like, what? Like, you believed it. Like, you were like, I made you think like something was going on.
No, I did. I just didn't say what.
Yeah.
I was like, get it. Like, it was like it was a something.
You were ready. Whatever you had eaten or drank the night before.
You got me to believe it was fire.
I got you in on it. Yeah.
And Andrew was in there and heard that.
I blame the wheatgrass.
And another one, Andrew was in there and you woke up.
Oh, yeah. Screaming. I thought somebody was coming at me. Somebody was standing over me.
But
I was laying
said,
in bed, and John Kerry said that I said, poke him. Poke him. Like, maybe I thought somebody had a spear.
Punch him or something. No,
not poke him.
Poke him. Poke him.
Like somebody had a fireplace poker in my scenario.
Well, you wanted us to poke him.
Yeah, Liz, I take no responsibility. If somebody is standing at the foot of my bed, I'm going to need you to poke him. I'm not.
That was a very funny moment. I got tears right now. Like, you've made me cry laughing. Oh my God. Poke him. And I think I was like, yeah, get him. Like, I was like you pull me into
him. I think
I
figured out that using my inhaler for asthma before I go to sleep at night was what was causing those night terrors, because it gets you kind of everything's dilated, your bronchial tubes, and there's some kind of your heart rate goes up a little bit. And I think I read some studies on that, like, if you can avoid it, don't use your inhaler right before you go to sleep, because it can cause you to have, you're more likely to have night terrors if you're prone to them.
Huh.
So they're more under control now. Of course, I'm eating better, somewhat better now. I'm a little healthier now, but yeah, poke him.
Poke him, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, we appreciate you guys listening. Thanks to all of you.
Find us on Facebook and poke up. Can you still poke people on Facebook? It doesn't make any sense.
I never got into all the whole.
No.
He waved at you. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to do with this. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry if we never waved back.
just send me a message or something.
Here's how you can wave. Leave a review. That helps the algorithm because people find us and find the show, which people are doing now, which is really great.
Yeah.
Leave that review. If you have a question, we answered a question last week. If you have a question for us or a topic you know you want us to cover,
yeah.
And if we decide it's not going to cost us listeners, we'll cover that topic in depth.
Yeah.
And give our dumb opinions.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and again, I do encourage you right now. You can check out our social media. There's some things that we're retweeting. Like, if you want to know some authors that we're reading right now,
yeah.
and other people we're listening to learn, especially in the current conversation about racism, go back if you haven't listened to our interview with Reggie Dabbs from 2 weeks ago. And he's going on some other podcasts right now. We're actually working on some articles and book stuff together.
Yeah, definitely check out Reggie and follow him. He's been making some huge inroads right now and lending his voice to some cool stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you can always follow, obviously, personally as well, Johnny. And Johnny's putting out funny content all the time. And you're very witty, Johnny.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. So check him out and check us out. Go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com, and you can find all the platforms there, whether it be Apple, whether it be Spotify, whether it be...
And the episodes are archived there. You can play them from the app as well, or from the website.
Yep. And so leave reviews. We see those. They actually really, really help a lot. Get a friend to leave a review. And we appreciate you guys, in all honesty, allowing us, you know, we're on the same journey you're on, you know, and figuring out some things. I have had some friends tell me that having these kinds of long-term conversations has helped them to not be so reactive to the issue, but to think broader. Like,
right.
Hey, you know, we're two friends who don't agree on everything, though. Sometimes it sounds like we do. I get it. But we've also talked a lot off the air, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's okay to be uncomfortable and to learn. And our goal has not ever been to, like, be offensive in that. It's to have the kind of dialogue we think actually leads to growth and maturity to continue ourselves. Because 100 things we're talking about are things we didn't necessarily ascribe to fully 2 years ago. But, you know, we're learning and growing. So thank you guys for being malleable and open to not just enduring that, but allowing that same process in you. We think that's one of the ways that we grow. So it means a lot. And anything you want to add, Johnny, to that?
I don't. I think it's cool, and I think that's what's great about a podcast is, like you said, with like a tweet or a social media post, it's like there's a limit to it, and you can just, you're trying to get to the point, but you can't really expound on it and say, well, this is what I meant by this, or let's give this context, whereas with a podcast format, it's way easier to get the full story.
Yeah.
You know, so that helps.
Absolutely. So, hey, thanks for being a part of it with us. It's a journey. It's fun, and we're glad you're on board with us. So we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
Are you concerned about tensions in the Middle East? Do you wonder where we're currently at in the biblical timeline? Are we really in the last days? Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Carl Muller with the Inside the Epicenter podcast. Every week, my co-host, best-selling author Joel Rosenberg, and I answer those questions and more. You'll hear inside knowledge of our meetings with leaders at the highest levels of government in the U.S., Israel, and the Middle East, equipping you to filter the news with biblically sound insights. Find Inside the Epicenter on your favorite podcast app, or go to joshuafund.com to listen and subscribe.